Good morning, everyone. It is Saturday, November the 14th, 2020. It is currently 10:30 a.m. Central Time, and right here in my hands is The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. Yes, I know we started this series, it seems like a very long time. Time doesn't seem to function normally in 2020. So 2 weeks in 2020 feels like 25 years, but it feels like it's been years ago. But in 2020, one of the things I wanted to do while everything was going crazy in 2020, while there was so much controversy and debating and arguing, and it feels like the world is on fire, I wanted Christians to stop, kind of withdraw themselves from all of that noise, all of that chaos, and focus on some things that would lead to hopefully spiritual growth, to help them focus on things from a spiritual perspective. So I tried to get people looking at the book of Proverbs. I tried to get people looking at The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. I tried to get people memorizing scripture. There's a lot of things I've tried to do. I haven't necessarily accomplished all of those things that I've wanted to. I've not necessarily done everything. I mean, you know, yeah, I could look, I feel a little disappointment in how I haven't really been able to organize and get everything done the exact way I want to. And, you know, we could, there's a failure in my part there, but I hope that I've been able to accomplish something in trying to help Christians accomplish what I'm trying to get them to do. And that is to focus on your spiritual life. And I just believe the book of The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis, I believe it's a book that is very beneficial in getting you trying to have spiritual and theological thinking. Whether you agree with the theology in the book has transcended all kinds of theological perspectives, all different streams of theology, and it's been accepted in the Catholic world and the Protestant world and all over the place. And I just think it's a book that raises, that gives you a spiritual perspective that's worth considering and struggling with. So that's what we've been doing. I've been doing these like little devotional messages where I pick up a copy of the book of The Imitation of Christ, and we just start reading it and we start talking about it, hopefully to spark conversation. Now, it hasn't sparked a lot of conversation, but I'm hoping that if it didn't spark conversation with me, it sparked conversation with other people, with yourself, and that it's accomplishing something. This is one of those cases where there's a part of me that says, just stop, just give up and move on. But there's another part of me that says, you know what? This, everyone may hate this series, but I'm not giving up. I'm not going, because I'm going to prove a point. I'm going to finish the series, even if there's no one left by the time I get to the end of it. And I know we've still got a long ways to go through this book, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it. And so that's what we're going to do. So I'm getting ready to take a drink of water. There was one chapter. There was one chapter where I really... I did not accomplish. It was bad. It was bad. But which chapter was it? Let me find if I have it here. It was really, really, really bad. Chapter is book one, chapter 11. Yeah, the last episode that we did, obtain peace and progress in grace. And I found myself for some reason, progress. Which way do I say that word? See, is it being used as a noun? Is it being used as a verb? And which way? And it was really bad. It came across really, really bad. I felt like I didn't do a very good job in the chapter. I didn't feel like I really articulated anything. And I felt like it was a disaster. But if you've been listening to me lately, I'm really on this, I've been doing a lot of thinking about this idea of pride and humility. And so there's been some recordings I've done that have been really bad, but I've left them there because I'm trying to really figure out like if I produce something that's bad, I don't want to produce anything that's bad. I want to produce things that brings God glory and benefits people. But if I produce something that's bad, really bad, and it's like humiliating because I said the word incorrectly or whatever the case may be, if I leave it there, then it leads to me being abased, me being humiliated, me being humbled. And that's really been a spiritual theme that I've been working on, this idea of pride and humility. pride and humility, and that we that pride needs to be destroyed in our lives, and we need to be humbled, and we need to be abased and not exalt ourselves. So I left it there for my spiritual good, because I don't even want to go back and listen to it because I'm embarrassed that it's there. But that's good, because it reminds me of my own shortcomings and my own failures and my own weaknesses, which is a good thing. So it may not bring you any spiritual benefit, but it brought me spiritual benefit. But that's something I've really been meditating and thinking a lot about, and you keep hearing it show up in a number of discussions. And sometimes if you'll, I don't know if listeners really notice when a certain theme emerges. I don't really know if people, I don't really know how closely people listen, but yes, sometimes certain themes and ideas emerge. And we're going to return to a theme in today's episode that we've kind of talked about before, but in this case, Thomas A. Kempis is going to guide us through the discussion, all right? So let's go to chapter 12, book one of The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. If you haven't been with us, you really should get a copy of the book. It's free. It's online. We try to give away some copies of the book. We try to give away some free copies. I think there were certain things I required people to do. I think leave a review on Apple Podcast, whatever. And I don't think anyone took us up on that, which is kind of disappointing. But the books are available. You can probably find it, again, online for free. I think you can get it for a Kindle for like 99 cents. Again, it's called The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. And we're in chapter 12 of book one. Here we go. The title of this chapter is Prophet of Adversity. Prophet of Adversity. Now, he's going to argue that there is profit that comes from the adversity that we face in life. Now, the prophet, I think we have to see this, is a spiritual prophet. At least I'm going to argue that. We'll see where Thomas A. Kempis goes, but I want to make sure we understand that. When we talk, sometimes we think, you know, adversity makes me a better person, right? Adversity makes me a better this or a better that, or it gives me, and sometimes we look at it from a very humanistic perspective, right? I think the only way to truly embrace adversity as being a positive thing is not that it makes me a better person, quote unquote, or it somehow has a benefit in my life. Because at some point you would start, like, from a very earthly, fleshly perspective, you go, well, wait a minute. The adversity was far worse than the supposed benefit I gained from it. Forget this. I don't want adversity. I want to avoid adversity because the benefit doesn't match the amount, the cost of the adversity. But if you have to look at it from a spiritual perspective. A spiritual perspective says, if adversity brings profit to my spiritual life, in other words, it brings me to a greater level of devotion to God, a greater level of faith, a greater level of spiritual maturity, a greater purity in my life, then that's a good thing. So we have to see the profit, I think, from a spiritual perspective and not a fleshly perspective. But so many times, I think, as pastors, we say, hey, adversity brings you great profit. I think sometimes we almost articulate the fleshly, earthly benefits of it. And no, we as Christians are looking at the spiritual benefit. But let's see how Thomas A. Kempis takes us through this little journey on this Saturday morning, talking about the prophet of adversity. Let's see what he has to say, all right? And I've got two translations here of The Imitation of Christ, and I may go back and forth, but here we go. It is good for us that we sometimes have some weariness and crosses, for they often call a man back to his own heart, that he may know that he is here in banishment and may not set his trust in any worldly thing. All right, there's paragraph one. Oh, there's a lot to take apart there. Let me read it to you again. I'm reading from one translation. We'll read it from another in just a second, all right? Here we go. So he says, it is good for you and I as a Christian that we sometimes have some weariness and crosses, some trials, some tribulations, some adversity. It's a good thing. Why? For they, the adversity, the weariness, the crosses, the difficulties, they often call you and I back to our own heart, to his own heart. Now, what does he mean by that? Okay, we'll see. I think what he means there is it calls us back to a singularity in the heart, that the heart is focused on the right thing. because this is what it does. It teaches us, it reminds us that we may know that we are here on this earth in banishment. In other words, this is not our home. We're strangers. We're pilgrims here. This is just our temporary, we're moving towards a heavenly city, right? So this reminds us this is not our home. All of that pain, all of that trial, all of that tribulation, all of those difficulties remind us this is not where, we're just here. And he, again, this translation uses the word banishment. And it reminds us of that this is the reason, that you and I may not set our trust in any worldly thing. All the problems in the world reminds us that we're not to trust in any worldly thing. And I wish Christians would understand that. All the difficulties in this world, we're not to trust in worldly things like politics, politicians. We're not to trust in that. That all of these issues are to remind us that we're looking for something better, something different. Let me look at this from a different translation. It is good for us that we may sometime have sorrow and adversities, for they often make a man lay to heart that he is only a stranger and a sojourner and may not put his trust in any worldly thing. So let me read it from this translation. This states it in a little, kind of makes it a little clearer. It is good for you and I as a Christian that we sometimes have sorrows and adversities, because they make a man lay to heart. So the idea, what they want us to see, the way they translate it, is it brings our heart back to the reality. It reminds us in our heart that we're only a stranger and a sojourner here. In fact, I think of it this way. Adversity and difficulty creates a discontentment in our heart for this world. Like, we can become lovers of this world, become content in this world. Adversity and difficulties make us discontent with this world, and it makes us long for something better, long for something different. The problems and the difficulties in this world shows us the vanity of living a life under the sun, borrowing from the book of Ecclesiastes. All right, so let me read this to you again. It is good for us that we sometimes have sorrows and adversities, for they often make a man lay to heart that he is only a stranger and a sojourner, and may put his trust in world and may not put his trust in worldly things. It is good that we sometimes endure contradictions and are hardly and unfairly judged when we do and mean what is good. All right, so they go on and add to it. I'm going to stay in this translation. It is good that we sometimes endure contradictions and are hardly and unfairly judged when we do and mean what is good. So sometimes it's good. He's saying it's a good thing that sometimes you are misunderstood and judged even when you're trying to do the right thing. He's like, that's a good thing. It's a great, it doesn't, now listen, it doesn't feel like a good thing. You're like, wait a minute, people are saying these things about me. That's not true. They're judging me. They're accusing me of these things. That's not true. And you want to defend yourself. You want to defend your reputation. And he's saying, no, it's a good thing. Why? For these things help us to be humble and to shield us from vain glory. For then we seek the more earnestly the witness of God when men speak evil of us falsely and give us no credit for good. When everyone is speaking about us, gossiping, slandering, hurt, speaking all kinds of accusations about us, it can be the most shameful, horrific thing. But at the same time, there's such a spiritual good because it can destroy us. It can humble us. It can shield us from vain glory. This is a completely different perspective in life. This is, I want to make sure I've got to stress this. This is so important. You and I have to reach a point in our spiritual journey that we value spiritual advancement, spiritual maturity, spiritual growth. We value our spiritual life more than we do temporal fleshly comfort. I want you to hear that again. You have to reach a point in your spiritual life where you value spiritual maturity, spiritual growth, spiritual advancement more than you do earthly, temporal, fleshly comfort. Now look, we all want fleshly comfort. We want life to go well. We want peace. We want tranquility. We want everyone to speak well of us. We want to have a good reputation. We want everything to go great. But what you have to value, now it doesn't mean you can't desire those things, but you have to desire more your spiritual maturity, your spiritual advancement. And if taking away any of those earthly, temporal, fleshly comforts and removes all of that and creates adversity, difficulty, shame, humility, humiliation, and all, if all of this brings about a spiritual good, we value the spiritual good over the temporal, earthly comfort. Now, I can say that. I can preach that today. Oh, but I don't live that way. Because as soon as everything goes wrong in the earthly, temporal, fleshly world, then I get frustrated, I get angry, I get upset, I get irritated, I get mad, I get bothered, I get depressed, I get discouraged. Oh, don't look at me like you're better than me. You do the same thing. And rarely do we stop and go, Lord, everything's going wrong today. Everything's going bad today. Everything, I'm irritated today. I'm frustrated today. I'm angry today. People are saying these things about, I don't ever stop and go, Lord, thank you for all of these things. Please use them to purify me. Please use them to break me. Please use this to destroy pride in my life. Please use this to keep me from vainglory. Please use this to abase me, to bring me low. Rarely do I do that. Rarely do I say, Lord, remove all of these things. Stop all of these things. Our first reaction is to complain about it, grumble it, to change it. And if we do turn to God, we turn to God not to use it, but to remove it. Rarely do we turn to God and say, hey, use all of these difficulties. We turn to God to say, please remove it. Please stop it. Please end it. That demonstrates we have the wrong mentality. That demonstrates completely we have the wrong mentality. All right. Let me go back. I'm going to pick up this translation again. Therefore, all right, this is kind of the second paragraph. Therefore, ought a man to rest wholly upon God, so that he needeth not seek much comfort at the hand of men. So we need to rely completely on God so that we don't seek much comfort from the hand of men. When a man who feareth God is afflicted or tried or oppressed with evil thoughts, then he seeth that God is the more necessary unto him, since without God he can do no good thing. Then he is heavy of heart, he groaneth, he crieth out for the very disquietness of his heart. Then he groweth weary of life and would fain depart and be with Christ. But by all of this, he is taught that in the world there can be no perfect security or fullness of peace. Now let me put it all together and read it all together. Here we go. It is good for us that we sometimes have sorrows and adversities, for they often make a man lay to heart that he is only a stranger and a sojourner, and may not put his trust in any worldly thing. It is good that we sometimes endure contradictions and are hardly and unfairly judged when we do and mean what is good. Let me read this all together because I keep messing this up. Let me read it all together one more time. It is good. But the reason I'm having problems is I keep wanting to stop and say something. So I need to just read this and not stop. But my mind is stopping going, oh, that's a good point again. All right. So no matter how many times I've read this book, every time I read these lines, they're just so convicting and challenging to me. But let's do this again. It is good for us. It is good for us that we sometimes have sorrows and adversities, for they often make a man lay to heart that he is only a stranger and sojourner and may not put his trust in worldly things. It is good that we sometimes endure contradictions and are hardly and unfairly judged when we do and mean what is good. For these things help us to be humble and shield us from vainglory. For then we seek the more earnestly the witness of God when men speak evil of us falsely and give us no credit for good. Therefore ought a man to rest wholly upon God, so that he needeth not seeketh much comfort at the hand of men. When a man who feareth God is afflicted or tried or oppressed with evil thoughts, then he seeth that God is the more necessary unto him, since without God he can do no good thing. Then he is heavy of heart. He groaneth. He crieth out for the very disquietness of his heart. Then he groweth weary of life and would fain depart and be with Christ. But all of this he is taught, that in this world there can be no perfect security or fullness of peace. In this world, there can be no, I'm getting some weird ad popping up on my computer, so I apologize there. I don't know what was going on there. So I'm not even on a website, but on my computer just sent me some weird ad, and I'm like, what is that for some kind of virus protection? And I'm like, no, leave me alone. I'm trying to do a live broadcast. See, that's an adversity, and I'm getting frustrated by it. But what Thomas Kempis wants us to understand is that in this life, we're never really going to have true sense of security or even really true complete peace. And a sense of not the peace that we're going to experience when we're in the presence of God and in heaven, and there's no more pain and no more sickness and no more death. Now, clearly, we can have a peace on this earth that passeth all understanding, so we got to make sure we have a biblical balance there. But I know what he's trying to say, that in this life, in other words, we're never going to have the security that everything's going to go well because we don't know. I mean, look at where we were the end of 2019. Could you have ever thought that all the things that are going to happen this year was going to happen? So we never know exactly what's going to happen. We never can have true security, and we can never have any sense of complete peace that everything's going to work out. What we can have peace in is that there is heaven waiting for us, where there's going to be no more pain, no more sin, no more death, no more suffering, no more tears, and that we're going to be eternally secure there. That's where we set our affections on things above. That's where our hope is for a heavenly city, that this world is not our home, that we're just simply passing through. And he's saying that all of this adversity can lead us to stop, in a sense, focusing on this and turning our attention to God. But let me make it very clear. The thoughts in this chapter are great theoretically. They're great theoretically. You can hear this preached in a sermon and go, amen, 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 amen. But I'm telling you, for it to have any impact on your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, for this to have any true impact on your daily life, you have to reach a point. You have to reach a point where you value your spiritual growth and maturity far more than you do earthly temporal comforts and peace and tranquility. You've got to desire one above the other. And I think we have to ask ourselves, do we truly desire our spiritual growth and spiritual maturity and spiritual purity more than these other things? We say we do, but I think we see what here. As soon as the problems begin, as soon as the difficulty, the adversity hits you, again, what do we tend to do? We tend to complain about it. We get angry. We may even lash out. We get discouraged. We get frustrated. And typically when we turn to God, our initial request, our initial petitions to God is to remove it, is to end it, is to get rid of it, to bring it up, to fix it. We rarely first approach God in prayer saying, Lord, this has been brought into me. I'm experiencing this. This has been frustrating. This has been irritating. Lord, use this. Use this. Help me see the spiritual value in it. Don't remove it until I see the spiritual value. Don't remove it until it's accomplished its spiritual work in me. We want to circumvent that. We want to just get past it. We want the problem to go away because, listen, if we're honest, we value our temporal earthly comfort and peace and tranquility far more than we do our spiritual advancement and spiritual maturity. I'm just as guilty as you. Because our perspective is so earthly. We say this is not our home, but we sure act like it is. We say we're sojourners, but we act like that we stopped sojourning a long time ago and we're not on a journey to anywhere. Sometimes we act like that we're on a journey to getting a husband or wife. We're on a journey to get our job. We're on a journey to retirement. We're on our journey. You know what I'm saying? Like we're on our journey to death, but no, we're on a journey to a heavenly city. And our journey here is to hopefully all of the difficulties that we face is to move us on in our spiritual journey, in our spiritual life. the temporal is simply a tool to advance the spiritual. And I think we see sometimes the temporal as simply a hindrance and a frustration and a bother. I think that's something that we need to consider. I'm just going to stop right there. I could throw out a lot more thoughts, but there you have it. That's chapter 12 of book 1 of The Imitation of Christ by Thomas A. Kempis. There's a lot there we could really take apart, but we'll stop right there. We'll stop right there. A very good chapter. Oh, I want to say so much more, but we'll stop. The next chapter is on resisting temptation, so that should be interesting. But there you have it. Any questions, any thoughts, any feedback, email me, newsif@yahoo.com. That's newsif@yahoo.com. All right. Everyone have a great day. God bless.